Hello, everyone. I'm Jacob Tender, and this is episode 4 of Variable Bitrate. We're moving right along here, and I've been having a lot of fun with our guests so far. If you haven't yet, check out the last 3 episodes with Dan Bogosian, James Shotwell, and Maria Garonas, as well as the pilot with John Baisley. Feedback is appreciated and accepted in the form of reviews on iTunes, mentions on Twitter, or cold hard cash. This week, I'm joined by Connor Feemster. Connor is a music photographer from Pennsylvania and the editor-in-chief of Mind Equals Blown, which has been one of alternative music's most well-written blogs since 2009. On the side, he's also an actor and tour manager for No Stranger. Connor, it's awesome to have you on the show today. I've been really looking forward to it. Have we even spoke on the phone before?
I don't think we've talked ever.
I don't think so either. It's usually just like Facebook chats.
Facebook chats, anything that like I can click with my thumbs or my fingers behind a keyboard, whatever. That's about it.
That's the story of this podcast, basically. I mean, I guess I've met Dan, James, and Maria in person.
Oh, well,
but Maria, me and Marie just the once, but I hadn't met John. So
that's
why I kind of like the idea of the show. I just like having the opportunity to talk to some people that I don't often get to see in person.
Right.
So let's talk about you a little bit. Where did Connor get started? Where did you start out with this whole music industry thing?
Honestly, going to shows. I was that really annoying kid in high school who tried to get all of his friends to go to these club shows with him, and nobody would willingly go with me unless there was something in it for them, so I would always end up buying them dinner. It's just that kind of thing where I was like, what band is this? Oh, that band sounds like that other band. And I'm like, yeah, that's the point of a genre, you nerd.
What kind of shows were these? Who were you seeing?
Oh, sweet Jesus, I don't want to tell you. No, I'm kidding. It was mostly just, God. I like to call it the 2006-2007 neon revival of Fueled by Ramen. just basically all those bands that sounded the same. Like, I was a huge, huge fan of, like, Forever the Sickest Kids and Hit the Lights and all these, you know, Cobra Starship bands. I was just like, that's what I loved. And honestly, actually, my fiance and I were revisiting a lot of that. We drove to a wedding upstate, and it was about a 2-hour drive, and he was like, why don't you just put on, like, a Pandora station for Cobra Starship or something. So I did from their first record, and it was just the glory days of everything, and it was so crazy. And then in the back of my mind, I'm like, why did I only like this?
Well, it was great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, I don't often find myself listening to Cobra Starship that often, but I do think about them. And I'm oh man, I freaking love that band.
Yeah, because nowadays I think of, wow, Cobra Starship was a thing. Oh wait, Midtown was also a thing. Where is Gabe Saporta? Where is he right now?
I never really got into Midtown. I was more of a Cobra guy. Again, you know, I was totally in that Fueled by Ramen Decay Dance thing.
Yeah,
you know, that was
absolutely
all me. Is it any way related to Fall Out Boy? I had the CDs ripped on my computer and Music Match jukebox. Like, it was there and ready.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So you started going to shows, and then what happened?
Yeah. I started going to shows, and I would always, honestly, at every show I went to, I basically took my like crappy little bulky point and shoot that you could like hide in your Converse high top so you wouldn't be found out when you were getting patted down. I would take that with me to almost every show, and the pictures would just be straight up blurry because it was from the crowd. I didn't know what I was doing. I just wanted to, you know, remember the night kind of thing. So I would put it on my Facebook. In fact, if you go back far enough in my personal Facebook page, you'll probably see like cute is what we aim for photos from 2008 or something. But, I just started doing that. And, basically just actively going to shows, actively introducing myself to random people. It started with just fans at shows. I garnered tons of friends from that. Mm-hmm. And, just my big mouth got me to a lot of places because I would never shut up. But it it just got to the point where I was lucky enough to meet some of my favorite musicians. And it was honestly, I started doing the whole music photography thing professionally because of Anthony Green. Hmm. And he not only is my favorite, basically my favorite person on the planet, but Circus Survive is my favorite band. Anthony Green is my favorite musician. I ended up, the first time I met him was at a studio session from a local radio station.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't even plan to ask him this, and just on a whim I just straight up was like, hey, can I shoot your show tonight? Because he was playing in town tonight, and he was like, oh, are you a photographer? And literally in response I said, I guess so. And he was like, and he said, all right, I'll get you a pass, just talk to my tour manager. So I did. And
wow,
it, again it was my I didn't have any of the, like, you know, the right gear in order to do all this with, but honestly, I'm no, like, gear queen. Like, you can shoot with whatever you want to shoot with, mm-hmm. as long as you can capture the moment correctly. And I like to think that my photos from that night weren't so terrible, but they were pretty bad. But no, it was then, because that was the first night I ever shot a show, I guess, with the idea of shooting a show in mind instead of just going to one. Uh-huh. And I ended up really liking that, because it kind of gave me a second appreciation for me being there.
Right.
Because the first was basically, oh, I'm here for the show. I love this band. I love this musician, whatever. But the fact that I'm trying to capture these things for a reason now.
Yeah.
It really made things a lot better. So it got to the point where I liked that more than I liked just going to shows. So I decided I wanted to do it more and get more into it. And it was just, again, more talking to people. Like, I ended up talking to Mind Equals Blown. Basically, I don't know if do you know Landon DeFever? I don't even know if that's how you pronounce his last name. He actually got me my job starting on at Mind Equals Blown, because he and I were friends on Instagram for God knows how long. We just followed each other because he collects records. I do the same. And
yeah,
he was in the industry in that sense. And I was like, man, you know, that would be really cool if I could do what you do. And he was like, we're hiring.
We said, when was this?
Oh, my God. This was probably this was September of 2013. So
okay.
I was that was the start of my senior year of college.
Oh, wow.
And,
okay.
September 2013. And he basically pointed me in the direction of Joe Ballard, who is he's technically not on the staff of Mind Equals Blown anymore, but he's like a liaison.
Okay.
In a sense. And I have Joe to thank for so many things, especially my growth within the industry, because he was the one who took a chance on me. He was the one who basically reviewed my application, reviewed the pieces I'd written on my crappy little blog that I don't even think exists anymore. And he loved it so much that he wanted me to come on. So I did that. And I started strictly just doing written pieces, whether it was news posts or reviews or whatever. And then I told them, I was like, listen, I do this photography thing kind of on the side, and I feel like it would benefit me if I could get into more shows with the site or anything like that. And they said, well, absolutely, we don't really have a huge photo team right now. So I started doing that, and then basically with every show that I shot since then, I just got a little better, a little better, a little better. And the best way to get better is to just keep doing it. So I straight up did. Like, there was, I think I went to more shows than I did, like, more shows per week than I did going to class in my senior year. And I was like,
yeah,
I gotta not do that. But
yeah,
you're doing
college right at that point.
Yeah, basically. It was senior year. I didn't care. So
screw it.
I got my BFA, whatever. I still do all that, whatever. But but yeah, no, that was cool, because that literally got me my start in everything. And that opened even more doors, and my big mouth talked to even more people. And
yeah.
Yeah, what were you saying? I'm sorry.
Yeah, let's go back to the beginning of Mind Equals Blown again, because in the last episode, Maria was talking about how when they bring on writers at Mind Equals Blown, they have, like, trials.
Yeah.
How does that work over there?
I honestly think that Joe let me surpass the trial, because he liked my work so much from my, because basically what I showed him was that I reviewed my top five favorite records of 2012.
Okay.
And I just sent him the separate links for every
one of them. Which were
what? Oh my God, I don't remember all of them. I know that I include my top record of that year was 10 Stories by Me Without You. I also had Now's Threads. I remember my favorite EP was I the Mighty's Karma Never Sleeps.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what else was on there?
I'm amazed that you can remember that many.
I don't think I can remember anymore. Floral
That's
Green, Title Fight. Title Fight's Floral Green was on there too. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was the year for
Green. So that, yeah, it's weird because 2012 is like forever ago. But yeah, I honestly think that allowed me to surpass whatever trial there is, because I don't quite remember doing something like that, and I do remember getting quote unquote special treatment for getting like signed on, and I think that was the special treatment was that I didn't have to do the trial.
Oh, alas, well, I'll have to have somebody else on to give me all the details.
I know. We'll get someone from my site.
Cool. So, all right. So you start at Mind Equals Blown. You start writing there. You're taking some pictures.
Yeah.
And then more stuff happens. And eventually you're featured on Instagram.
some more stuff happens, and then you fast forward to like 2 weeks ago.
yeah, I just saw this on your timeline the other day. I thought it was really cool and something to highlight that on Instagram they have like their own like music channel. It's just a page called @music, and it's mm-hmm. Instagram's own thing, right?
Yeah, it's their music page. So basically, right. They're a big outlet for music photography, obviously, because it's the music account of one of the biggest photography platforms ever. it's kind of cool, and I still can't believe that really happened.
Which photo did they actually select?
They selected a photo that I took from the, I believe at this point it was still the last show I shot. I think so. I went to go see The Matches out in New York City, uh-huh. and they were performing Decomposer in full, which is one of my favorite records ever. And the two opener bands, the first was Rare Futures, which is fronted by Matt Fozzi, who was in Happy Body Slow Brain. He was in Taking Back Sunday for a bit. He played with Envy on the Coast and A Great Big Pile of Leaves, Atlas Genius. He's done so many bands. So Matt was actually the reason I got a photo pass that night, because The Matches kind of aren't really a band anymore. So they don't really have a PR team except for themselves, really. So I found it quite difficult to figure out a way to shoot that show. I had gotten tickets anyway because I was so excited to see that record. But I just, when I realized that Rare Futures were opening, I decided to just message Matt. I was like, hey, what's up? Hey, let's catch up. Do you think maybe I could shoot your show? And he straight up was like, yeah, of course. I love what you do. And I love that you help with my bands and whatnot. So yeah, I'll throw you on there. And I was like, great, thank you. Right. So I get there and I'm there with all my gear and they play. Their set was incredible. And then the second band that played, I had never heard of. And I even told my fiance, I was like, listen, I'm not here for a publication. I'm here for my own worth, whatever. I don't need to shoot the second band. I'm a little tired. I'm not going to do it. And the band is called The Skins. And they're based out of Brooklyn. And they, when I, just by seeing them in the first 5 seconds, I'd already put all my gear away. I was just sitting there with a beer in my hand watching the band. First 5 seconds, I throw my beer at my fiance. I'm like, hold this. And then I open my bag. I throw my stuff together and I fly into the photo pit because they were just one of the craziest, not even like a crazy performance, but just the best surprise I could have ever experienced. And they're basically, they're a female fronted band. They incorporate R&B and jazz into this like punk scenario. It's so weird to describe it. And they honestly don't have a lot of music out on the internet yet. They're going to be doing a big release soon. Mm-hmm. And they're actually on a label that's owned by Adrian Grenier, who was in Entourage.
Oh, okay.
I think he was the lead in Entourage. And they're on his label, which I didn't even know he had one. But they just blew me away. They were so good. And the singer's name is Bay Lee, which I guess, I believe her first name is Bailey. I don't know her last name, but her stage name is Bay Lee.
Okay.
And she was just incredibly personable to everyone in the room. And I thought that was really cool. And her voice was incredible. Her performing was incredible. The whole band was so good that I really just wanted to get those photos up first. I haven't even touched my photos of The Matches from that night, even to this day, because I've been really busy.
Wow.
Because I threw my Skins photos up because they were just my biggest surprise of the year so far, and I just needed to let people know that this band honestly exists, and they're so good.
You love that feeling, you know, when you find that, like, kind of surprise band on a package or a compilation or, you know, anywhere, and you're just like, oh, wow. I want to be the guy that tells everybody about this.
Yeah, and they were just really, really good. And I had noticed, because I followed the music account on Instagram, and I noticed that they were running what they call a monthly hashtag project. Mm-hmm. And basically, they touch on different genres or different themes of photos every month with this MHP thing, monthly hashtag project. And this month's was MHP pop. And I guess you could say that The Skins are kind of like a pop band, but a lot of the entries that I've seen from them were like these pop divas and these like lesser known groups and these artists that are going to emerge and whatnot. So on a whim, I was just like, okay, I'll hashtag it with MHP pop. And I did. And I didn't think anything of it. And that was maybe, oh God, that was probably 2 weeks before I found out that this thing was even happening. Like before that my feature was happening. And, I just tossed it aside. I was like, yeah, I'll tag it, whatever. I'll throw a couple more tags on it. I don't care. So I put it aside. because I was just really happy with the photo. I didn't really need anything more. I just wanted to get that out there. And it's actually funny how I found out. So I'm on my break at work, and my sister texts me, and she goes, OMG, you're Insta-famous. And I'm like, honestly, you know that's the dream. But how? Like, I don't know that I am.
You're kind of like, uh-oh.
Like, what the hell did I do?
Did somebody make me a meme?
Exactly. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she sent me the link to Instagram's official blog. And the Instagram blog was basically touching on their MHP hashtag, like the hashtag project thing. Mm-hmm. And they were showcasing three of their favorites that they saw all month. And the second one in there was mine, was my photo
nice.
Of Bailey. And she then followed up, my sister followed up with a text saying, it's going to be featured this weekend. And I was like, it doesn't even say that in the article. How do you know this? And it turns out one of her friends works for Instagram.
Oh,
and
cool.
She saw my handle and she was like, that's interesting. That looks like the same last name as my friend from college. And so she confirmed it with her. And she was like, that's my brother.
Oh, wow.
So
small world.
And she was right, because 2 days later they featured it on the account. And it's really cool, because like my followers jumped up a little bit. I mean, it all happened while I was at work. So I get on my break and my phone is like, I have to scroll through all this. What is going on? And it's because the post was, they posted it. So my followers jumped up a bit. Like Adrian Grenier from Entourage thanked me for it, and I was like, "That's cool." And
wow.
So yeah, it was just really nice to know that they were actually paying attention to these entries, because I don't even know how many people entered, but you could imagine it's a bunch.
Oh, I'm sure it's a ton.
And I just can't believe that someone out there took the time to go through every single one and even let alone pick mine as a favorite. And I just thought that was really, really cool, and I'm still honored. Probably going to be honored forever. But yeah, no,
that's a cool job,
really cool.
Though, to be the guy that, or the girl that has to go through all of those.
I mean,
a bad gig.
Yeah,
you're
well, the guy
that kind of like scroll through a feed all day.
Yeah, and the guy that reached out to me, his job is like curator of, like he's a curator of Instagram account submissions or something. Like that's this guy's job, and I just think that's so cool, because I want a job like that. I would love that. So of course I followed up after everything happened. I was like, thanks again for featuring my photo. By the way, are you hiring? And I haven't heard back in 5 days. So I don't know.
Yeah. Speaking of jobs, it's been almost a year, hasn't it? Since my alt press piece on day jobs.
I think if not a year, then almost.
Yeah. So about a year ago, myself and some friends of mine came on to Alternative Press as sort of columnists. And I don't think it really lasted very long for any of us. I don't think any of us are still super frequent contributors. I think James does something on occasion. Jack Appleby writes for the magazine now. But my thing was kind of just like, not necessarily features or like profiles on bands, but more of like, you know, the daily industry life kind of thing.
Right.
More or less the written version of this podcast. But I had this idea for this day jobs feature, because I was really worn out of my job, and I knew a lot of people in the music industry, including yourself, who also had day jobs. So yeah. How have things changed for you since then? Are you still working retail?
Yeah. I think the only thing that's really different from the time of that article was that I don't work two jobs anymore. I just work one.
Okay.
And given that it's full time, I very rarely work in theater anymore.
Yeah.
And that hurts every time I think about it, because theater is the one thing that has been a constant in my life since I was 5.
Uh-huh.
And I went to school for it. That's what I have my BFA in, is acting. I like that. Nothing makes me happier than performing on a stage. And because of this crazy scheduling of a full-time retail job, right, I don't even have weekends free. I very rarely have nights free, because all I want to do is sleep. It's weird, because back when you talked to me about the day jobs thing, I had a good system going with my two part-time jobs and the shows I would be in and the shows I would shoot. It was really easy. And then some promises fell through at one of the jobs. Didn't get promoted at the other one. It was just that kind of thing where I needed the money in order to move out with my then boyfriend, now fiance. Mm-hmm. And it's just I needed a change. So I jumped ship to a big store with a big title and a full-time job. So I'm there all the time. And
yeah, like 40 hours, you pull in more than that.
No, it's honestly, it's between 37 and 40, but it is, given that I do/want to do so much outside of work, that I'm immediately just exhausted because there's all these things that I know I can be doing, but I'm only maybe doing one of them at a time when I would be more than happy doing all three at a time. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. The balance is hard. Like with your schedule, are they set shifts every week or is it like a rotating sort of thing?
I'm honestly one of the only few that has a set schedule, which is really nice.
Yeah, that is kind of nice.
But
that's rare.
It shifts every so often that if I am in a 2-month long rehearsal process, I know something's going to get messed up.
Yeah.
And I know that if the show I'm in is doing 2 weeks of performances, I'm going to have to get off of work for so many random shifts that it's almost easier for me to just take 2 weeks off to go on tour. You know what I mean? Because if you go piece by piece by piece, they're going to be like, what the hell's wrong with you? Why are you being so weird and flighty? But it's weird because I went from working in small stores to this massive new department store that is actually brand new to America as of last year. So the name is flying around. People are coming in. We're making a ton of money.
Right.
And they need me all the time. And
yeah,
when I
worked it's harder when you go further up the ladder too, because you have less people that can just, you know, take your spot for the day.
Yeah, especially when you're the only one of your title in the store.
Right.
And it's that's what I am. So it's quite difficult to come to terms with that.
Uh-huh.
But I'm always looking for something in a field that I actually want to be doing. Like I know I'm in retail because I'm good at it. I've been doing it for almost 8 years. I haven't really done anything else except bussing tables. So given that I've been like born and bred retail ever since like my like professional career has been a thing. So it's something I know how to do, but I'm kind of sick of it.
Yeah. When you say you're looking for jobs, what kind of jobs are you looking for?
Honestly, like local, I would love something Philly based, like in the city. I currently live in the suburbs.
Okay.
But I would love something that's based in the city or even like, I mean, it's everybody's dream to have a remote job where they can work from home, but I would honestly love that. I would love to just like have like an editing job at a magazine or something, or because I know that our goal over at Mind Equals Blown is in the near future, in like 5 quotation marks, we want to monetize the site and we don't have that opportunity yet because what little money we get from advertising goes to our servers and it goes to making sure that the ship is sailing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard when you think about that, but like we recently, but it's probably been at least over a year and a half at this point, but we got a new, chief strategy officer. Her name's Christina, Troitino, and she's incredible. She's basically our go-to person for anything we ever really need. And it's great because myself, my co-editor in chief, Nick Natelski, and even Maria, when she was there, I think Maria worked there when Christina was on. But we would all just go to Christina for whatever we need. And I've been expressing to her how frustrated I am with my work life because I fear that my job, my full-time job over at the store is interfering with my Mind Equals Blown job as well. Because even though you can work that on your own schedule, because it is such, when it comes to journalism as a whole, a site like Mind Equals Blown is so lax because it is that kind of, you know, editorial job or just a review job or something like that. We're on a site that's not too huge, but it is still reputable. And it's getting to the point where I feel like I'm going to work so often, coming home and going to sleep where I'm like, crap, did I have to edit tonight? I don't even know. So it's just one of those things where like life keeps catching up with me at the wrong times. And she even said that it is her goal while she is here with us to monetize the site. So that may be happening at some point. But
I hope it does.
Yeah, that would be incredible for everybody involved. And I know that like even up until then, the kind of jobs that I want are culture based. We're preferably Philadelphia culture based. Not just
like local mags,
local mags or something that has to do with the city. Like one of my best friends works at the Penn Museum in the city. So like there's even stuff like that. I would love like a culture based Philadelphia job, which would be awesome. but they're almost never hiring. And if they are, they get snatched up so fast before I can even read the rest of the post.
Yeah, that's the dream. That's my struggle too. I'm also in a sort of high up retail position in my area. And it's just constantly like looking for jobs. And for me, I forget to look for jobs. You know, I want a new job really bad.
Right.
Then when the day is done and like I come home and I either have to record the podcast or, you know, edit the podcast, put together the images for the podcast, work on the script for the other podcast, any of my freelance stuff, like once that all kind of piles in on me, plus there's the whole like, you know, I have a personal relationship I need to maintain.
Yeah.
I just completely forget that I'm supposed to be job hunting. So luckily I have a loving girlfriend that does that for me. And she is like constantly looking up jobs and sending them to my email and just saying, do it. Just apply for it tonight.
That's awesome.
Then I do. So, I mean, that's kind of my thing too. I'm also looking for sort of local culture, sort of driven jobs. I'm really looking to like newspapers and, you know, editing or graphic design sort of jobs that'll get my creative juices flowing throughout the day so that I'm not like completely burnt out, you know, something that kind of energizes you and pays your bills.
Yeah, exactly. I'm honestly the most jealous when it comes to seeing people who outwardly love their jobs so much. And that makes me equally so happy for them and so upset for me. Because I'm like, why can't I be doing something like this that I know I'm good at, that I know that I want to be my livelihood? And it's just no doors are opening. And that's kind of where I am right now. Not really like an oh, and all hope is lost kind of feeling, but it's hard. It's a really big hill to climb at this point, but I'm sure it'll come to fruition at some point.
I sure hope so. In the meantime, it seems like you're keeping busy with other stuff. I mean, you do a podcast.
I do. It's actually Nick's, my co-editor in chief, Nick's, it's his baby, but, he and I are usually the front runners for it. Yeah. And it's on My Nichols Blown.
Right on. So you're editor in chief. You occasionally do a podcast and you're recently on tour. So you had to get some time off work for that, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Which I'm still shocked that they allowed, but they did.
That's kind of cool. I mean, if you go to your manager, you're like, hey, I'm going on tour. They're probably like, that's interesting.
Yeah. I think the words out of my manager's mouth were, well, that's really cool. And I don't want to be the one to say no.
Right. I was like, okay. Yeah, that's kind of neat. So tell me about that. You were on tour as like sort of a merch photo tour manager for No Stranger.
Yeah, so No Stranger is the moniker run by one of my best friends in the entire world. He was my roommate through college, and his name is Jonathan Cooney, and he is an incredible musician. And I'm not just saying that because I'm biased or whatever, because he's one of my best friends, because I would hear him practice every single day in our apartment, whatever. He's just such a good performer. And he's his biggest inspirations when it comes to how he runs his business as a musician. One of his biggest inspirations is drawn from Intuit Over It. Because he's really into this whole like DIY thing. He's into the punk aspect, but his guitar playing is all borderline jazz. And his voice is angelic. He's had vocal lessons ever since high school. He's just a really great person all around and a great performer. And I had been little backstory for people in my line of work when it comes to music photography. For some reason, the huge, massive end game is getting on tour.
Yeah.
And whether not like being published in Rolling Stone, not making this your living, but somehow letting a band get you on the road with them is the end all be all of a music photographer's career. And that's honestly just socially saying, I mean, it's not like written, but you see it. I'm in all of these groups with other music photographers. They're like, oh man, I'm so close. I'm going to get this tour. I know it. Oh my God, I know it. And then you see other people who are more reputable in the scene and they're like, oh, I'm on my third tour this year. It's like, shh, stop it.
Yeah. You're just looking for an entry point.
Yeah, honestly. And that you can't get onto these big build packages without a little bit of road experience, at least, obviously. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. This tour that I went on with No Stranger was my first tour. And, I didn't know what to think about it when it happened because Jonathan's been trying to get me on the road with him for a while. And it's gotten to the point where because I had these little part-time jobs where I was just making, you know, like $8.50 an hour, I was like, I honestly can't afford to go with you. I'm sorry. Like, I just had, right. I can't. And of course, any photographer worth their salt and who respects themselves enough would never do something like this for free. It's mm-hmm. the kind of thing where you have to prove yourself and you need to make sure you get what you need, because people seem to think, oh, if you're a photographer, you'll do everything for free because exposure is apparently payment. And it's absolutely not. Yeah. So I
still have to feed yourself.
Right,
and
of
you
course.
Are taking off work. So it's not like the bills at home are going away.
Exactly. So Jonathan heard me out when I explained this to him, because I mean, he's been my best friend for damn near 5-6 years. And he heard me out, and he knows how much of a struggle it is for these people. But when it comes down to it, like, there are bands who are featured in like full page ads in alternative press who hardly break even as it is on the road.
Yeah.
And for a solo musician of his caliber in a setting like the DIY punk scene, he's not going to be making a lot of money himself. So I told him from the get-go, I was like, listen, I'll do this with you, but only if like we can support each other and we can both eat. That's basically all I really care about, because I had some money. So I actually set some money aside for the bills at that point. And there wasn't even that many I had to pay because I wasn't at home. And so like electric wasn't even a thing. So that's just how it is. But yeah, no, he took me out, and we were gone for about 2 weeks. We started out in Philly. He lives in Delaware, so he's basically right next door to me. And we started out in Philly, went out to Pittsburgh and Grand Rapids. And then we met up with the incredible Anthony J. Sanders, who is the singer for the Island of Misfit Toys, which is an incredible band.
That's a great name.
Yeah. They are an incredible band. They're a 9-piece, like, orchestral punk band. They're signed to Broken World Media, which is Derek from the World's Beautiful Places label.
I was going to say that kind of sounds like the World's a Beautiful Place.
Yeah, when you think about it, if you just see pictures of the two of them side by side, you're like, ah, yes, you can tell they're friends. But no, Anthony, the three of us, Anthony, Jonathan, and I have been friends for about 3 years because, again, coming full circle, that experience that I felt when I photographed the Skins, I thought the same thing the very first time I ever saw the Island of Misfit Toys, this 9-piece band fitting in the West Philly basement, performing this incredible folksy, punk, grandiose music. And I was floored. I was completely blown away. And because of that, I know Jonathan was too. So he and I ended up befriending Anthony. And it's just gotten to the point where we all catch up with each other every so often. And he invited Jonathan to go on tour with him. So that's how Jonathan landed that. And then I honestly am lucky enough that my first tour was with two really good friends. because they were the ones who really kept me afloat. They kept me in line, obviously. Like, we all have to keep each other in line. But it was incredible because he's a really nice person. And he actually went out. Basically, what he was doing was solo stuff, but with a full band.
Okay.
So he enlisted a couple other musicians out of Chicago, where he's from. And it was just the seven of us for, like, almost the whole 2 weeks. So we all got really close. And the whole experience was easily one of the greatest of my life so far. And I'm really glad that my first tour wasn't with some band who I admire, who won't even give me the time of day if I'm not working for them. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's good to go out with friends your first time. I was able to do that with Squid the Whale my first time around, and that was really only for a couple days.
Right.
So it's a good time. You know, you get to hang out with people that are your friends that maybe you don't even get to see that often. Like, in your experience, you know, he was your roommate, so that's a little different. But when you get to go out with people that know you as well as you know them, it's a lot different than going out with somebody that you're aware of when it's not the same way both ways. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So how was it to actually be on tour? You know, you haven't been out on the road like that before. So how was it to live out of a car and maybe hotels or fans floors?
Yeah, I mean, we honestly didn't get a single hotel. Every night we had a place to stay, which was really great because not a lot of bands have that luxury. And we didn't have a van or anything like that. I mean, like, Anthony and his band had a minivan, and Jonathan and I were in a Subaru Forester. Like, that's just how it was.
Nice.
There was a night where I slept in the Forester because there wasn't enough floor space. I didn't care. Yeah. I mean, it's a roomy car, but I'm a 6 foot tall dude, so whatever. But I mean, obviously, yeah, there's discomforts, you know, like we had wet ones showers and we had dry mm-hmm. shampoo and all that stuff. So I mean,
yeah,
of course, the majority of the tour we were next to a storm system, so it was really muggy, really humid, really hot the entire time. So even just sitting in the car with the AC on, I was sweating. So it was just that kind of thing where it was like, ugh, time of year, whatever. It's that kind of discomfort.
Yeah.
It's stuff that I easily expected because I mean, no tour is perfect in that sense. I mean, you're on the road. You're literally traveling the entire time. So it wasn't any news to me, but it was kind of like a reality check in a sense, because it's this thing that I've been trying for so long. I've been trying to get on tour for almost 3 years.
And did it meet your expectations or was it totally different?
I honestly didn't really have any expectations. I had like my only expectations was that I would have a good time.
Yeah.
And so it immediately surpassed that because it was easily, like I said, it was one of the best experiences of my life, but that's mostly due in part to the people that I shared it with.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to the work I did, and talking to fans at like various shows, that was a part in and of itself that I really appreciated. Cause there are people who would come up to me and be like, oh my God, how do you like deal with like being friends with such talent like that? And I'm like, I don't know, dude, I lived with him.
It's tough.
It's really tough.
It's real hard.
It's so hard. But, basically on that tour, because it was just the seven of us and we were also like close from the get go, I ended up going from being Jonathan's photographer to media for the entire tour, doing photo and video. I'm actually, my other screen that's open on my computer is actually a tour video montage that I am working on from that tour, which should be up within the next couple weeks. So that's going to be really cool to see finished. But I ended up doing that. And then I ended up kind of becoming a tour manager for the entire tour. Because I was the only one who ever paid attention to directions. I was the only one who ever put in the Chipotle orders for the freebies and all that stuff. So,
right.
I ended up, because there wasn't, you know, there wasn't a venue to contact. There wasn't like an on-site person to deal with all the merch and whatnot. We were in houses and DIY spaces, you know, it was easy.
Right. Yeah. I think on every tour, there's somebody that kind of falls into that position. If somebody in the band hasn't already sort of like assumed that role, usually the keyboardist, I'd say somebody in the tour is just going to pick that up.
Yeah. And it was cool. I didn't mind it because I'm a very organized person and I really like thinking in that kind of headspace. So it came as second nature to me. And then it wasn't until Anthony even said, he was like, you're basically our tour manager. I was like, oh wow, I guess I am.
Nice.
So it was
something
cool
for LinkedIn.
It's something, yeah, exactly. Something to throw into LinkedIn, and I can be like, "Hey, bands, I'll do stuff for you if you take me on the road."
Well, cool, man. That sounds like a good experience.
Yeah.
My first time on the road, I was out 3 or 4 days, and I got the worst allergies of my life.
Oh my God, no!
It was so bad. I was, you know, when you're in a van, or really if you're in any sort of moving vehicle for extended periods of time, there is a driver, there is a co-pilot, and then there's everybody else in the car. So on the nights when I was co-pilot, I had the hardest time.
Right.
In this case, Bradley Walden was in the driver's seat, and we were driving away from, I think it was Pittsburgh, actually. We were driving away from Alter Bar, which is actually closing very soon. Did you hear about that?
I didn't, no.
Yeah, that kind of sucks. I love the venue. Anyway, we're driving away, and I'm co-pilot for the night. I'm like, okay, I got this.
Yeah.
I had no allergy medicine with me. I felt like shit all day long, but I'm like, you know what? I got this. We're only driving a few hours. We're going to get to a hotel. It's all going to be fine. I start nodding off, so he puts on Let Live, and he's blasting it. Everybody in the back is asleep, and he puts all the, you know, the speakers in the front are the only ones doing any work, but he's blasting it and I just conk out. I am just dead, and they're all really upset with me because he was getting tired and I wasn't keeping him awake. And then we got to the hotel and I wasn't paying any attention, so I started walking to the door, and then the guy at the hotel like noticed that we were sneaking too many people in and he got pissed. And I was just like, damn it, I'm that guy. I'm that noob on the tour that has no idea what's going on. And I was just like sick as hell.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I'm sure that doesn't happen to everybody. I'm glad right. you had a good time.
Yeah, and honestly, like, the one of the biggest challenges was actually being co-pilot, because there were some drives where basically, actually, after the show we did in, where was it, Rochester, New York,
mm-hmm.
We had, like I said, Anthony and Jonathan both found places for us to stay well in advance.
That's good.
And, yeah, that was really cool for, like, every night of the tour, which is awesome. And we all get to this apartment that we're staying at in Rochester, and it's easily, I mean, you don't know what my kitchen looks like, but it is the size of my kitchen. and there were seven of us, and the two people who lived there, and four of their friends who were staying over. And we were okay. just like, what is going on? There's no way we can even fit on the floor here. And why? That got to the point where I was like, listen, I'll sleep in the Forester. And I know Anthony wanted to sleep in his van. And it was just like, we can make do with it, whatever. And it got to the point where we realized that even if we did that, there was still not enough room. So we made the, I think it was a 3-hour trip to Albany that night after the show. After being at this apartment for a good 45 minutes and coming to the terms with not staying there, we didn't get to Albany until about 4:30 in the morning.
Oh my gosh.
And we were all tired because we had just driven all that day. They did the show, and like, I personally don't have a license. If I did and I knew how to drive, I would totally go for it, but I don't. And especially like, because not only do I not drive, but Jonathan drives a stick. So I definitely don't even drive a stick.
Oh, yeah. Even if you knew how to drive an automatic, you'd be fucked.
Yeah. So it got to the point where he was the only one who could do it, and I had to keep him awake, and I was dozing off while he almost was dozing off. And I was like, no, we have to do this. We have to keep going.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where we were just playing 20 questions until, like, for a good hour and a half, we were just like, dude, I can't do this anymore. we got there just fine. And it was just, oh man, that night was probably the worst of the entire thing, because it was just, I wanted to fall asleep so badly.
Who have friends over the night that they're going to have a band sleep on their floor?
I have no idea, dude. And the place was tiny. It was so small. And I'm just like, I just didn't understand what went through anybody's heads. Like the guy hosting was like, yeah, we could easily fit like 11 people. Like, no, you can't. it was nuts.
It sounds like that guy liked the idea of having a band stay over. Then he actually like wanted to help a band stay over.
Yep. Absolutely. I think that's what it was. Honestly.
Whenever I had like band stay at my dad's house, it only happened like maybe 2 or 3 times, but like before they got there hours in advance, I had beds made for everybody all over the place.
That's awesome.
And I had everything laid out to make breakfast in the morning.
Like, see, you're a good
total
host.
Dad mode. Yeah. All right, man. Well, I'm glad you had a good time on tour. I hope you get the chance to do it again. You know, I know that retail sucks, and you know, we're both kind of going through that together, and I think at some point things have to turn out, and we'll find other opportunities. We'll get out of it, and we'll be able to do our thing. In the meantime, we just got to keep plugging along and trying to do our creative endeavors during our spare time.
Absolutely.
All right, let's do some news stuff.
All right.
Cool. All right. First up, I actually got this link off of your timeline on Facebook. I didn't realize this was happening, but you shared this news blip from the New York Times saying that Paul Simon might be done playing music pretty soon.
Yeah, that one hurts.
Yeah, you big fan?
I am a huge Paul Simon fan. Graceland is easily one of my favorite records of all time, if not my number one. That's what I listened to growing up, was stuff from that era because of my mom. And just, I don't know, Graceland's just a perfect record. I love Paul Simon. Simon and Garfunkel was my first concert.
Really?
Yeah.
That's incredible. I grew up on Simon and Garfunkel. That was like my first favorite band.
Oh, really?
Okay, maybe it was Chicago, but I really only liked one Chicago song, and then there was Journey, but I guess, I mean, Simon and Garfunkel is, like, easily one of the first, like, 2 or 3 bands that I was like, oh, I like these guys. I'm going to listen to these guys.
Absolutely. I must have been, like, 7 or something, but yeah, it was cool. It was such a good show.
That's amazing. So what's going on here? He's what now? He's got to be like 75.
Yeah, he's 70, in at least
70, he's 74.
Yeah, he's past 70. I know that.
So he's getting old, and he's just kind of sick of it.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. It seems to me like that he doesn't have the drive to like keep performing.
And he likes performing for the sake of performing. He doesn't like the stardom. He doesn't like all the attention, it seems. But it bums me out. I had the chance to go to his show last weekend, and I was like, nah, I'll go to the beach and get sun poisoning instead. So I did. And that hurts, and it currently itches. But...
Well, he doesn't seem to have any like firm plans, does he? He's just kind of saying that he's sick of it. Like he's getting out of it.
Yeah, it seems to me like he
doesn't have a. I don't think he's going to put too much effort into keep on doing it.
Interesting. There's a quote here where it says, "It's an act of courage to let go. I'm going to see what happens if I let go. Then I'm going to see who am I, or am I just this person that was defined by what I did? And if that's gone." If you have to make up yourself, who are you? Gosh, man.
Like, existential as hell.
Yeah,
like,
man.
What is going on?
Who'd have thunk it?
Right? Paul Simon.
Well, that's a shame. I've never got to see him play. I've never outwardly looked into going to one of his shows, but it's one of those things where it's like, well, now that he's kind of moving out of it, I feel like I probably should if I get the opportunity. Otherwise, I'm just going to be like, well, crap. Probably should have gone.
Oh well.
Huh. Man, this is I'm gonna link this in the show notes because this is kind of a depressing thing. He has another paragraph here where he says, I've seen fame turn into absolute poison when I was a kid in the 60s. It killed Presley, it killed Lennon, it killed Michael Jackson. I've never known anyone to have gotten an enormous amount of fame who wasn't, at a minimum, confused by it and had a very hard time making decisions. So yeah, I'd say he's soured on it quite
a
bit.
just a tad. Oh my god.
Well, that's a shame. But he has a pretty long lasting legacy. I think he's got great body of work that I think will stand the test of time. I recently bought a couple of Paul Simon records at the record store. I just
really
grabbed a couple, and it was spurred on by Curb Your Enthusiasm. I was watching Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he was on there, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go see if they have a couple of records down at Lucky. So I walked down the street and grabbed a few.
Was Graceland one of them?
No. I didn't see that one there. It was probably, I was looking in like the dollar bins just to get a deal.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I got you.
I'm sure that was there, but I wasn't looking in the P's or the S's rather. So, interesting. Let's see what else. Okay. So this is kind of cool. Google recently got this license with LyricFind to put lyrics in search results, and they've been doing this for a while. I'm not sure who they were sourcing before, but they have like an official license now with LyricFind. And now, I mean, if it's available now, if you try just like typing in, like, for example, She's American lyrics, it'll pull up the lyrics for the 1975 She's American, like right away, right at the top.
That's crazy.
It's kind of awesome.
That's here. I'm actually doing that right now.
I like that because when I'm listening to music, especially ones that I know pretty well, but I want to know every single word.
Right.
I'll pull up the lyrics even while I'm driving. You know, I'll just pull them up. I'll read them. Because the nice thing is with the iPhone, you can just hit like that little A up in the URL bar once the page loads, and you can like make the font bigger and everything.
Yeah.
So I'll just like make it real big and just kind of like glance at it, so I like get to know the lyrics as I'm driving. And whether that's safe or not, you know, that's to be determined.
And the little, yeah, maybe.
But when I was like falling in love with the Pine Grove record, I was like, I have to know every single word of this, so let's get to studying. But the only place that I could get the lyrics was their Bandcamp. That was the only place you could find them like fully, or in a way that was easy to like navigate while I'm driving. So like I couldn't just go to Genius, and like I tried the Genius app, and I think Genius is really confusing to navigate. It's so much easier just to Google the damn song and to have it pop up.
Yeah.
I'm excited about this. I don't really know what it's going to do for either party other than like user convenience, but it says, while the terms of the deal were not disclosed, Lyric Finder chief executive and co-founder Daryl Ballantyne, project publishers and songwriters he's saying that they're going to see millions of dollars in additional revenue from this arrangement. So I don't know how that's happening. I don't know if like they're getting a payout every time it's viewed. I don't know how the songwriters are getting paid and all, but cool. I more convenient for me, and bands get paid. That's fine with me.
Yeah, true.
So yeah, that's kind of nice. What else? What about this one?
Yeah. If you're familiar with the Swancore scene, which a lot of people are calling it, which is
Blue Swan?
Would that be what? Yes, yeah. Blue Swan Records, run by Will Swan from Dance Gavin Dance. It's Swancore is a genre that has been coined by diehard fans of this music, whether it's Dance Gavin Dance, A Lot Like Birds, Hail the Sun, all of these bands that are basically a huge family. And these fans are so devoted, it's almost scary. And I'm in a Facebook group devoted to these fans, and I'm like, I'm scared to be in here sometimes. And it's nuts. But anyway.
Well, all these bands share members, right? That's like the key.
When you look at the bands themselves, I don't think there's a single person who jumps from either one.
Oh, really?
Because I know that the big connection was when Kurt Travis used to be in A Lot Like Birds. Previously, he was in Dance Gavin Dance.
Yeah. Isn't Will Swan in CNVAR?
Oh, well, yeah. So CNVAR is an amalgamation of all these bands. Yes. Okay. But when it comes to all the bands, then like they're full lineups themselves, there isn't anybody who jumps across.
Gotcha, so, go on.
CNVAR is basically the super group of this little genre. And it features Will Swan on guitar, and Sergio Medina from Stolas on another guitar, and Mikey Franzino from A Lot Like Birds on bass. It features Joe Arrington from A Lot Like Birds on drums, and Donovan Malero from Hail the Sun on vocals. And they are an incredible band, I'm telling you right now. they're so good. So I've been tight with these guys for a little while, and we've been helping each other out in our respective careers in that sense. And the fact that we're finally getting this full length from CNVAR is going to be so important for whatever post-hardcore scene you can think of, because there is so much work being done on here, and it is incredible. And this record, I'm assuming, is going to be so, so very good. And I'm really glad that we're finally getting it. And we're getting a nationwide tour out of it, which is awesome.
Nice.
But on top of that, with the album announcement called Stay Lost, they've released their first single called Omniphobia, which is, as it expected, rips. It's a banger. It's so huge.
It's a good song.
Yeah. And it's a little more dialed down compared to the other CNVAR tracks so far from their first EP. But that only shows their range to me. So I'm very excited to see what the rest of the record holds, because this all alone is so good.
Yeah, I'm stoked. I loved that first EP when it came out. I really had no idea what I was like getting into. And at the time, I was really into RDO and just going through the new releases.
Yeah.
And it was up there, and I liked the artwork. So I'm like, okay, I'll check this out. And it wasn't what I expected. I wasn't expecting like anything post-hardcore, but then it was. Mm-hmm. Then I found out a little more about it. I'm like, okay, I can see where this is coming from. This is really cool. But it felt really underappreciated or overlooked. Like, a lot of the people that I was following were into it.
Right.
But that's because they all read the same websites that I do. And I think Mind Equals Blown obviously was like way behind. Like you guys were all over it. You guys talked about it quite a bit.
I reviewed that EP for the site.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I think that was my favorite EP that came out that year, but it was just, it's so, I can't say it cause I'm biased. Cause like all these bands are really, really important to me, but
it's just, there's something about it. It's like if you mix the Mars Volta and Circa Survive, you get this massive sound.
And yeah, that's a good comparison. I was trying to figure out like the guitar leads. I'm like, ooh, okay, this is really technical. It's really great, but who does this remind me of? And I was thinking Closure in Moscow, but I'm like, no, it's different than that.
That's even good too, though, because First Temple is very, very, very Mars Volta.
Yeah.
So it all goes down the list. It basically all ends up to Cedric. So that's just how it is.
That's really good stuff. That first EP is currently free on their Bandcamp. I don't know how long they're going to keep that up. Maybe until the new record comes out.
Yeah, I think it's until the record drops.
Okay. So yeah, I'll have links to that in the show notes. And if you want to grab that while it's available, that'd be a good thing to do. Or chip them a couple bucks. I think I tossed in like $2 because I've listened to it a couple times.
So many times.
Yeah. Good record.
Yes, it's worth it.
Let's see. Who else has new music? Taking Back Sunday.
Yeah, dude.
This new song is different.
It's very different. And I'm actually a big fan of it. I wasn't quite taken by their last record. I liked the first single. I liked Flicker Fade a lot. but happiness is as a whole kind of slept on.
Yeah, I don't think I listened to that one.
And that was also the same thing with the record before that, which was their self-titled, where they released this banger of a single, El Paso. And
yeah,
then the rest of the record I just didn't care about.
I remember liking that song. I think I might have posted that on Under the Gun.
Yeah, that song was really good. But that kind of worries me because I actually saw that, who was it on Twitter?
Jack Appleby. He basically didn't want this single to be like the new record as El Paso was to the self-titled, where no other track sounded like it whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Because we really like this first taste, but then the rest of the record is kind of a snoozer. So I don't know what's going to happen with the rest of this record, but I'm a big fan of this new single.
Yeah, let's hope it's not a tease of a change, you know, because I like when bands change it up. I think it's interesting when they try something new.
Right.
And this is different. This is almost like, I don't know. I've seen comparisons to like the Gaslight Anthem.
Yeah.
And
I said it sounded like a hybrid of Gaslight and Against Me.
Like even like Flogging Molly or, you know, something. Yeah.
And it's weird because you don't expect that to come from a band like Taking Back Sunday.
Right. So yeah, I wasn't expecting it. And it's sweet because he starts like, this is the music video that they put out for this. Like it started out with like a live take of this. So that was kind of cool. And then they just like tear it up. And I'm like, this doesn't sound like Taking Back Sunday at all. I was kind of confused. But hey, you know, if they're going to try something new, I say go for it. I hope the rest of the record's like this. It'll be kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it will, because I remember in some interview, it was either John Nolan or Adam Lazara saying that the new record is, as a whole, going to be a different direction.
Cool.
So I really hope that they're sticking to their word, because if it's a whole record of a sound like this, I'm stoked.
Yeah. Right on. What's this last one?
So this last one, while we're on the topic of new music, so we had CNVAR, we had Taking Back Sunday, and recently we also had a new song debuted from Touche Amore, and they are... It's been a couple years since their last record came out. And I remember when, not long after Is Survived By came out, they were teasing breaking up. And people were like freaking out. They're like, no, not my precious Touche Amore. So I was also scared. But then I saw that they signed a deal with Jay-Z's Roc Nation. And that was that was so weird to me. I was like, okay, I guess they're going to be doing things with Roc Nation. And, I still don't know what's come of that. I mean, I know they're going to be playing at this year's Made in America Festival, which is run by basically Jay-Z. So there has to be something along the lines in there, too. But
well, this happened when Roc Nation picked up their manager, right?
I think so.
And they have the same manager as Coheed and Cambria.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Blaze. That's his name, right?
Blaze. I think so, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, that dude follows me on Twitter. It's weird, and I'm afraid to interact with him because I don't want him to realize that he's like still following me, and then realize it was a mistake and then just go away.
Like, whoops, this is the wrong Jacob.
I wanted to interview him so bad in college because, you know, Coheed's one of my all-time favorite bands, and just I know I have the access to talk to this guy if I want to,
yeah,
but do I want to?
Do I want to embarrass myself that bad?
Right,
I get that feeling all the time though.
Yeah, but that was a weird announcement. The fact that like Coheed and Touche Amore are now like, you know, they're on the same label of these huge hip hop stars.
Yeah, it's nuts. So that threw me off. But then, not long after all that happened, like they kind of fell off the grid. They straight up stopped playing shows, if only for like one offs out in California where they're from. Mm-hmm. And I was fearing like, oh man, I'll never see this band again. I've only seen them once. And but then, then recently, like about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, we got news of a new record. And the other news along with that was that they signed to Epitaph, which is really cool because Epitaph has been signing a lot of these quote unquote emo revival bands.
Yeah.
And that I absolutely hate saying that. And I hate that that's a thing. But they have, like, they currently have The World Is, they have Pianos Become the Teeth. And now they have Touche, which is really cool because Epitaph has been one of my favorite labels for as long as I can remember. And if their biggest band, like Motion City Soundtrack, is going out, why not bring in these great other bands to take their place? So I think that's great. But the record is going to be called Stage 4. And it's almost entirely about Jeremy Bulme's mother's fight with cancer. which I read about. And the whole, I mean, when bands write records about one solid happenstance or one solid thing, a theme throughout, you never know what to expect of it. It could become tiresome. It could become something great. Honestly, it could be really eclectic. But with a band like Touche touching on something like that, something so strictly that, I think it's going to be something really cool and really important too for people who may be suffering with this instance in their lives or within their family. So I'm very excited to see what comes of that, because I know that they're all really good musicians. They're all very talented writers. And the single's incredible. And it's kind of a shift in sound from what they're from what they usually do. Cause you know, Touche, they're that abrasive, not even that abrasive, but they're, you know, basically a hardcore band.
Right.
And, there's clean vocals on this song. And it's really cool to see, or hear rather, but it's really something special. And I think that the new sound.
Now, is that new
really
for
well.
Them? I'm not overly familiar with Touche Amore.
In this capacity, yes. I know that like they had, because I'm trying to think of other songs, but I can't even think of any of them. But I know if there has been any clean vocal performance within a Touche Amore song, it's been by somebody else, like a guest singer or something. I believe this is Jeremy singing on both cleans and uncleans, or whatever you call them these days. But it's something different for them. It's almost along the same lines as how Pianos Become the Teeth completely changed their sound with their last record. But it's definitely not at that high end of the spectrum of change, but it's sprinkled in there very well. Kind of like when Pianos released their song Hiding on a split with Touche Amore. But it all comes full circle, but you can tell that there's going to be a change. They've even said that there's going to be a change, and it's good to hear that it's working, because a lot of bands try to do this and don't do it so well,
and I think they're going to do pretty fine with it.
Interesting. That's one of they're kind of like on my list, you know what I mean?
Right.
I think everybody kind of has that list. It's like, yeah, I'm going to get around to checking them out at some point. They've been high on that list for a long time, because a lot of my friends really, really enjoy this band and really connect with them. But
right.
I think I have a hard time connecting to the hardcore thing sometimes, but I think it's just a matter of like context and what I've been listening to lately. Cause I go
right.
from like listening to Jason Mraz and then trying to listen to Touche Amore, and it's not gonna gel.
No.
But, who knows? Maybe I'll work my way through Runaway Brother and then Tiny Moving Parts, and then we'll see.
Are you saying that Tiny Moving Parts is on your list?
No. I'm very familiar with both of those bands. I'm going to warm myself up to that style of music.
Got you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
That's cool. I'll check that out.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's move on to some recommendations. I'll let you go first. Go ahead and pick a recommendation and go ahead and talk about it for a couple minutes.
Sure. Yeah. So when going back to what I spoke about earlier, when I was on tour with No Stranger, we had the immense pleasure of touring with Anthony J. Sanders of the Island of Misfit Toys. And he just signed to his solo stuff, just signed to Near Mint Records, which is run by illustrator and incredible designer Corey Purvis.
Uh-huh.
And his friend James Kasser, who's also a really great guy.
He's going to go nuts that you just said his name again.
Really?
Yeah. He tweeted the other day. He's like, I love listening to a podcast and then hearing my name.
Oh, did you mention him?
Yeah, a couple times, I think, actually.
That's incredible.
He keeps coming up. He's all over the place, that guy.
I know, it's nuts. But, Anthony just signed recently to Near Mint, and they're putting out his, I guess you could consider it a debut full-length record of solo material.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to be full band. It's going to be titled I Will Be the One Who Goes, and it's coming out in October. And basically his entire set on this tour that we were on was filled with songs from this forthcoming record, and both of the songs that he released on a split with Cam Boucher from Sorority Noise and Old Grey. Those songs are great too. Definitely listen to them. They're on Spotify. They're on iTunes, Apple Music, whatever. But they're really great songs. And I had more than enough pleasure seeing them every night, because it was just, I was blown away every time. But yeah, the record's going to come out in October. I extremely recommend it. Jonathan and I had the pleasure of hearing it a little bit early in Anthony's apartment, and I was blown away by it, and I can't wait for the fall for it.
Brad, I think if Near Mint's involved, it's got to be good.
Yeah.
So I trust those guys' opinions on things like that. Cool stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, so I've got one, and they're called Empty Houses, and if you're familiar with the pop punk band Fireworks, you might be familiar with their singer Dave. And somewhere near the end of Fireworks' run, Dave started up this new project called Empty Houses, which is a complete 180 to what he's been doing musically so far. He is not the singer in this band. There is a female lead, and it is a Motown sort of effort.
That is sick.
Yeah, it's unreal. It's really strange. It wasn't at all what I was expecting when I first listened to their first EP or first single. But they have a fairly new record out now. I'll have links to that here. And it's just different. It's really cool. I grew up on Motown sort of stuff. You know, my mom had this like Motown greatest hits dance CD. It's
right.
Just a, you know, a compilation that she probably got from Costco or, you know, whatever the local grocery store was when she was in, when she was around college age. So I always loved that. I love that sound, the energy, and it's weird that they're able to kind of relive that, but push into sort of a modern sphere. It's hard to explain because it is so different. It's a one of a kind sort of project. So I checked that out. And then I have these two new bands that I'm kind of listening to a little bit. I haven't listened to them much, but they're both recommended to me in the past 2 weeks. The bands are Shorthanded, and they have a record called Peace of Mind. And I think it's like a 4 or 5 track EP. And the first track is Spoken Word. I'm not huge into spoken word. I think I've mentioned that on the show before, but every track after that just gets progressively better. And it's a really cool and interesting EP. And I think they're going to come up pretty quick. I think they're really fun. And then there's another one called Table Talk, and they have a record called Evident out now. Apart from that, I've been listening to The Gorillaz a little bit, and nice. I can't explain why. I think I saw like their name in an article or something, and I'm just like, all right, well, I guess this is the time of the year that I start reading a bunch of Wikipedia articles on Damon Albarn and Gorillaz, and then I start listening to the records again. So I'm checking that out. And then my last one before I let you finish up with yours is Souvenir. Again, I mentioned Souvenir a couple weeks ago, but they finally released their debut on Chorus FM. They had the exclusive stream, so I'll have a link to that here as well. Their record is called Merit Badge Season, which is sort of sweet because I was Boy Scout growing up, and I kind of like that motif. In fact, after the show, I'm going to an Eagle Border Review for a scout that I don't know. So that'll be interesting.
That's
I've
awesome.
Never been on that side of the table before, so I have no idea what to expect.
That's so cool. My last two recommendations here. You mentioned earlier that you've been listening to the Pine Grove record. Cardinal.
Oh, man. I keep coming back to it. It's hard to stay away. It's so
I know. It's so funny because there are things on my... Because the way I listen to Spotify is I search for an artist and I just like shuffle it basically or listen to an album. And every time that I open my phone, no matter what I've been listening to throughout the day, Pine Grove is always back up at the top because I keep listening to Cardinal all the time.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because actually when we were on tour, actually, we had the pleasure of having the recently added guitarist to Pine Grove on tour with us. And he's a great dude. His name's Josh Murray. He's incredible. He's a friend with a couple of, with Anthony and a couple of his bandmates. So he was hanging out with us for some time.
Uh-huh.
And, he's actually who we stayed with in Albany, which was great. He was more than happy to stay up until 4:30 to let us come in. And I was like, damn, dude, you're true MVP.
And, space.
Yeah, no, yeah, that was cool. That house was great. They were probably the most hospitable house that we stayed at because it was his parents' house.
Uh-huh.
And the next morning, like, his mom made us, like, these vegan cupcakes. I'm sorry, vegan muffins. Excuse me. And this amazing coffee. It was just like, holy crap, this is the coolest place. Because they're very – you can tell that they're a very nature-inclined family.
Uh-huh.
Josh's solo endeavors are basically kind of almost bluegrass and folksy.
Okay.
Which is, I guess, is why he is in Pine Grove. But
right.
it's just that his whole family is like that. And I thought that was really cool because that's how my grandparents were. That's how my mother was growing up. So it was something really nice and homey about that. And that's honestly why I like Cardinal so much, because it's this weird amalgamation of straight up folk music in this punk scene. And if you're presented something like this to a group of people, half of them are going to be like, what do I do with this? And the other half is going to eat it up. And it seems like everybody is eating up this record. And I'm so happy about that because it is expressing, it shows a lot of variety in people's tastes. And it's the kind of thing where it's like, oh yeah, I like this stuff that basically sounds like country and I'm not afraid to admit it, blah, blah, blah. But it's just like, no, you don't have to say that. It's just because it's good. You don't have to say
right.
it.
Right. Yeah. I think it's a testament to the record because like it is different and it wasn't what I expected when I first pulled it up, but then it grows and you just have to appreciate it because of how well assembled it is from the lyrics down to the music. You know, every single part of it is it's perfect.
Yeah, it is a borderline perfect record, and I find something new with it every time I hear it, and I love that. And it's just, damn, it is.
What's
so
your
good.
Favorite track today?
Today, no, it does change. No, my Visiting has to be one of my favorites. If not only for that, I'm out of my goddamn mind line, because I just, oh my god, I love that. But no, Visiting is the one that I keep coming back to recently. Before, it used to be Size of the Moon.
I mean that song, dude.
Yeah, it's I can go on and on about this time and time again.
That one comes back as my favorite.
Yeah, I think
that overall is my favorite song.
But of course, my favorite used to be, when I first heard the record, my favorite was Old Friends, because I just love, that's a great intro song.
It's like one of those perfect intro songs.
Oh yeah, it's so good, and that's like the first 20 seconds of that song are what made me fall in love with that band. Because they have been around for a little bit of time prior to Cardinal.
Yeah.
And I never really listened to them.
After I looked through their Bandcamp page and then bought every single one of their releases.
Yeah, they've been around for some time, but I never even had the attention span to listen to them. And then people were freaking out about Cardinal, and of course they played it in order. Because I was so infatuated about it, it instantly brought back memories of my childhood hearing this kind of music. And I just thought it was so great, and it still is something so special, for sure.
Absolutely.
So aside from that, though, that is easily one of my favorite records to be released this year. However, my favorite EP to be released this year has already come out, and I don't think anything is going to top it, because it is one of my favorite new bands that I've discovered in the last 5 years, and they're called Adjy. That's A-D-J-Y.
So that's not an acronym.
No, it's actually short for Adjudicator, I came to find out. Because I had the pleasure of seeing this band with on the Foxing tour that they were on the road supporting Dealer with. Okay. And I had the pleasure of seeing them and speaking with their, I guess you could call him the brainchild of the project. His name's Chris. And he, just before I get into the band, Chris is a very like erratic thinker, and not that he's like a crazy person, but he just, you can tell that when, if you're ever having a conversation with this man, he is thinking so far ahead of what he's currently talking about that when he finally catches up to himself, even he's like surprised. And it's so cool, because this was probably the first instance where I actually took the time to not, I was listening to what he was saying, don't get me wrong, but
yeah,
paying attention to how he was talking. And this dude is incredible. Like as if his music wasn't enough, like this guy was one of the most fascinating people that I've met in a very long time. So he went into very, very excruciatingly detailed descriptions of how Adjy creates their music. And I believe he told me that it started as a poetry project that somehow became musical. Mm. And then he was talking about like every single song on this EP that they've released. The EP, by the way, is called Prelude, and in parentheses, 0.3333. And that title alone is expressive of what this thing that he told me, in that every song that's on this EP, I think he mentioned every song that Adjy's ever written, has to do with the powers of threes, whether it's time signatures, whether it's lyrical content, whether it's however many people are on the song. Uh-huh. It all comes back to threes.
What? And
it's nuts, dude. Like, I wish that I was recording what he was talking to me about, because I want to remember every single detail, but that's about as much as I can remember. But it's just very cool. And he's fascinating himself, but the EP is so good. It's four songs. It's 20 minutes long. because one of the songs is like 9 minutes, but it is so good. It is a perfect release from start to finish, and I'm so mad it's not a full length yet. But they're the newest signees to Triple Crown, so they will be releasing a full length at some point. He did say that the next thing to focus on is the vinyl release of Prelude, so I'm very excited for that. But he says that the writing process is his most valued time, so he's going to take his time with the full length. But I definitely recommend listening to it. It's really good. And given that I was one of the only people in the room who knew every word to the songs they were playing on the Foxing Tour, their performance was so good that I literally was brought to tears. And that honestly never has happened to me before.
Really?
And I was like, what the hell's happening? Why am I doing this? I'm wiping my eyes. I'm like, I'm not doing that. Who did that to me? But no, dude, it's really good. And I really recommend that everybody listen to this band, whether you like folksy-ish music or not. It's basically, if you were a fan of Anathalo and or As Tall as Lions and you want these bands back, listen to Adji, because you're going to fall in love with it.
That's a good recommendation.
Absolutely. It is so good.
Cool. All right, this is the part where I generally wrap it up. But I just remembered one more note that I think you might be into talking about. Are you an Amberlin guy?
I am indeed. We had a whole Mind Equals Blown podcast devoted to the goodbye of Amberlin.
Okay, so there's this news blip that just came up today. Amberlin put out a full discography vinyl box set. Did you see this?
This is news to me as you are saying it, and my wallet is crying already. Where can I find this?
Let me grab it here.
Oh my god, what? I mean, I already have my favorite record of theirs on vinyl, but I would love to have all of it.
All right, so for $165, you can get the entire Amberlin discography in a box set. It's limited to 1,000 copies. It's printed on 180 gram black vinyl, and I bought mine this morning. It's kind of amazing.
$160, though?
Yeah, it's $165.
Oh my god, I can't. I physically can't do it right now, and I know it's going
to
sell out.
Doesn't that suck? I know. I mean, I really shouldn't either, but I had to.
No, I paid my rent today, dude. I can't, but I really want to.
That's the frustrating thing. It's like, I think I have all of their records except New Surrender, because you can't freaking find that one anywhere. It was one of those RSD releases, and they just never reprinted it.
Which is weird, because that was like their only major label release.
Right. And it wasn't their most popular record.
No. A lot of people hated it, actually.
I hated it. Doesn't mean I don't want it.
Right, of course. You would love to have the whole thing.
Well, Modern Vinyl reports on this this box set that it includes a booklet that has a complete oral history of every album. It has all 7 albums, which would be, you know, it's like $20 a piece individually plus the box. So 165 is pretty normal. I'll have links to that in the show notes. They might still be available.
It says that there's also a custom slip mat.
Yeah.
What?
I mean, it's a good set. I think you're getting enough bang for your buck here. It has new artwork. So it's like, it's completely original. It's not like any sort of repress that, you know, you might see. Yeah. I think this might be the last opportunity that you would have to get some of these records. I'm not sure that they'll do another repress of any of them in the future. If you're an Amberlin fan, this would be a good thing to pick up.
Damn. Oh man, I'm going to cry. That's crazy.
Well, sorry to show you. All right, man. Well, good recommendations. I'm really glad you were able to come on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I really appreciate it. The opportunities like this don't really come very often, so it's very nice to do something like this.
You know, it's fun just to like talk about music.
Yeah.
So often we're writing about it, and it's kind of hard to. You have to sum up all of your thoughts in like one go, and you have to
commit it to
paper, so to speak. So it's kind of nice to just kind of like freely talk about it, where you can say things that you don't necessarily like fully mean, but like people get it because there's context.
Right. Of course.
You know what I mean. So yeah, it's cool. I like talking to folks like you who I have not had the chance to talk to before. And I hope at some point we can meet in person. I'm really upset that I missed that show in Akron. Like,
I know. I meant to remind you too. I was like, huh, I'm in Ohio. I don't know anybody in Ohio. Let's keep going. I was like, damn it.
All All right. Well, that's a wrap for this episode of Variable Bitrate. I'd like to thank Connor again for joining me. Don't forget that you can find us on Twitter and Facebook, and you can find the links to everything that Connor is working on and everything that we talked about in the show today in our show notes. And you can find those at curbside.audio/VBR/4. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time.